Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. For a period of time, especially immediately post-pandemic, downtown Columbus had a problem with abandoned storefronts. If the buildings are in close proximity to each other, these empty stores can make the city look a little economically downtrodden. To give these buildings new life, Columbus City Council has supported initiatives to revitalize the downtown area and support minority-owned businesses at the same time. Plus, initiative focused on small business growth on the east and west sides of the city will create communities where people want to work and live. We're looking at how more Black-owned businesses are being grown in Columbus this hour. And we begin with Columbus City Councilman Nick Bankston. Welcome to All Sides, Councilman.
Thanks for having me. And happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you. Yes, this is my 1 year anniversary of hosting All Sides today. Yeah. I've been hosting 1 year today. So thank you. Okay, so one of the initiatives I wanted to start with is helping women and minorities launch their ideas. It is the Ground Floor Growth Initiative. It was started in 2022. What made you want to get involved in this ground floor growth?
Yeah, you know, in 2022, when I came into office, we were just coming out of the pandemic, and being a Columbus kid, downtown's a special place for me. And I knew that there was going to be a concerted effort of both public-private investment to ensure that all of the momentum that we had going into the pandemic, that we came back. And that downtown would come back bigger and better than it was before. But we also knew that it was going to be different. You know, downtown is evolving into a 24-hour neighborhood, a neighborhood of choice. And with that means that there has to be amenities there for the residents and visitors and workers, either returning or new workers coming there. And so the vision really around the Ground Floor Growth Initiative was to say, we know that we have to be a catalyst in getting some of these vacant storefronts back operational and back up. But what we have to do is make sure that it's reflective of the entire city, that it's reflective of the diversity, the beauty that you see on so many corridors like Morris Road, 161, Bethel Road, all of these great eateries and different dynamic and diverse businesses that we see that did not have a place or see themselves in downtown. Mm-hmm. And so what we wanted to do was remove some of those barriers. There are already barriers for minority and women businesses, but there's even more barriers for all businesses doing business downtown. It's just the nature of any downtown, right? Costs to renovate spaces, parking, all of these other challenges that go into operating in a downtown setting. And so thus the Ground Floor Growth Initiative, we partner with Downtown Columbus, Inc., who is our partner in that work, as well as Columbus Empowerment Corporation, helping with the technical assistance. But our goal there was, again, to ensure that those storefronts weren't just occupied, but we were intentional about it, to make sure that the curation of who went there reflected the city, but also reflected the needs of the growing residents of downtown and the changing demographics of our downtown.
So with this Ground Floor Growth Initiative, are you helping them with money or helping them find money?
It's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. It's the program is structured in three ways. It's one, to help with tenant improvements. So to help buy down the lease, if you will, to get those tenant improvements. When we look at those beautiful coffee shops and different mm-hmm. spaces, it takes a lot of money, right, to mm-hmm. put into that. And that is a big hurdle for a lot of folks, because you either have to bring that cash to the table yourself mm-hmm. or you work with the developer to bake that into your lease for those improvements. But we're helping those tenants on the front end with some of those tenant improvements. We also have a graduated lease payment for these businesses. So the city is subsidizing the rent for 50% in year one of the lease, 30% in year two of the lease, and 10% in year three of the lease. And that's really to give those businesses an on-ramp and the ability to find their footing in a downtown setting to get the customer base that they need to basically get to that full level. And then I think the most critical piece of this, and so excited to be working with Kim Knights and her team at Columbus Empowerment Corporation, is technical assistance. Wrapping our arms around these businesses, not just saying, hey, here's the keys, good luck, but really giving them that technical assistance throughout the 3 years as well of how to do business, marketing support, what is an escrow account, what, you know, my business hours. Should they be this? Should they not be mm-hmm. that? But having that really that technical assistant, that consultant that you can pick up the phone and call as you're trying to navigate your way through business in downtown is so critical. So I'm so excited. We've gone through two phases of applications, and how proud to say that by Q1 of this year, all seven businesses will be open, which is pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. All seven of them are minority or women-owned businesses. Out of that seven, four are Black-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. And again, that was the application based, right? These were businesses that didn't necessarily need a handout. They just needed an opportunity to tell their own story.
Mm. I was looking at some of the examples on the website. There's Three Bites Bakery. There's a coffee shop, fitness coaching, a clothing store. I mean, we could list them all, but tell me, just give me some examples or tell me a story of helping, you know, one or more of those businesses grow. I don't mean to make you pick a favorite, but, you know, you could just give a tell me a story.
They're all my favorite, and, yeah. and I'm excited. We'll be featuring them in Mahogany, which is Mahogany Columbus. It's a publication, a Black-owned publication, but it's to highlight people of color throughout the community. So we'll be highlighting all of them in this edition in January. But one that stands out to me, and I tell his story because it's just so great, is that of Doug Buckley. He is the owner of Black Kahawa Coffees right there at the corner, that iconic corner of Broad and High. Used to be a Tim Hortons, but now it is a homegrown coffee shop. And when I think about Doug and his story, it is really the story and the impetus for the Ground Floor Growth Initiative. I met Doug randomly at an Urban League event, Columbus Urban League, in their parking lot. He had a table and this great coffee. Then the next time I saw him, he had a truck. Mm. Then now, right, he's mm-hmm. in a brick and mortar. So seeing how he has progressed and how he really stuck to it and had a story, this story about coffee and its origin from East Africa and how he brought that to Columbus, him also being a Columbus kid and growing up with the city. And so being at that cross intersection of Broad and High,
yeah.
right, which is the intersection of our community, to have him to be able to tell his story and to grow his business there. And he's doing wildly successful now. It's not just coffee there at the shop. He's now working with different corporations and businesses downtown and supplying them coffee. And that's really what it's about. I think that what we have found is that when we make that initial investment and remove barriers for folks, they will always be able to shine. Black businesses are just businesses. The only difference is that for decades and for generations have been locked out of financial opportunities, contracting opportunities, and those barriers still persist today. And so it's incumbent upon us that if we really want an ecosystem that lifts all businesses, those that have been impacted the most by barriers of the past, we have to remove them. And we have to do that intentionally and do it unapologetically.
Did you have trouble convincing him, as an example, to say yes to downtown as opposed to being in the heart of a neighborhood?
No, Doug was like already picked his spot out. I was like, Doug, it's an application. He was like, I know I'm going to get it. He was actually, his cart was actually already at that location at Broad and High. So it was a perfect fit. When he had his truck and his cart, he would be down on the Scioto Mile as well. So he had built a bit of a clientele in downtown, which was really good for him. But a lot of other folks, and I tell them that they're catalysts. Downtown at the point when we launched this program was not back even to the foot traffic it is today. So these folks were taking a risk. And so we are thankful for them for trusting us with their baby. When you're a small business owner and an entrepreneur, it is everything that you're putting into that. You are spending days, nights, and weekends every minute because it is something that you are birthing. And so we were able to have these folks be a catalyst. And what has done is now spurt other businesses that have popped up in that Gay and High corridor just organically. There's a Black-owned business that is expanding from Cincinnati franchising here, coming to the Gay and High area as well. There was a African-based art gallery that just opened on its own, right?
Where'd this come from?
On the same block. And so what we noticed is that when you create that energy, folks want to be there. But what I told them is that you all are a catalyst. Right, that will create ripples for other business to come into downtown.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how more Black-owned businesses are being grown in Columbus this hour with Columbus City Councilman Nick Bankston. Tell me about the idea of focusing on bringing local businesses to these spaces as opposed to national chains, because I would think as a member of city council, you just want, it's kind of like getting butts in seats. You want people, the buildings to not be vacant. So would it have been easier to try to attract a national chain instead of these local businesses?
You know, national chains, it's actually harder. There's a certain formula that they're looking for. There's a certain, I think, amount of foot traffic, whereas with local businesses, they tell a story. And national retailers and chains are also struggling a little bit, right, when we think about all of online sales and the rise of that. Whereas what you have with local businesses, folks want to shop local. Mm-hmm. They want to get that thing that they can't get anywhere else, right? They want to have that unique experience. And I will tell you, my vision for downtown Columbus is that when you come to visit here, you get to truly experience Columbus. Mm-hmm. That when you come downtown to Columbus, yeah, you may not have a Target or you may not have a Walmart or whomever, but you can get everything you need, but it's local. And then when folks leave our downtown, they say it is the downtown with the most local businesses than any other downtown in America. That's really what we should be championing, is how do we lift up Columbus's story and showcase it in the heart of our city? I mean, there's so many fantastic businesses all across this city that their story needs to be told right there in the heart of it. And so I think when we think about why go local or why that is happening, is because that's what people want. I think folks want to support their economy. They want to know that when they invest or buy to purchase that thing, it's that dollar is circulating in their economy. And we get that with local businesses much more than you do with national or larger chain brands.
Talk to me about the idea of needing residents downtown or needing workers downtown so these businesses have patrons, or if you need places for people to go first. It's like a chicken or an egg thing. Do you need the businesses first and then the residents and workers, or do the workers and residents have to be there for the business to come in next? Which comes first?
We, you know, traditional economics would tell you that people have to be there first and then the retail follows. Downtown Columbus is an interesting place because we're a chicken having an egg and an egg that's having a chicken.
To mix our metaphors.
And the reason why I say that is because, you know, what happened with the pandemic or what we see now with the ability for folks to work from home, it is a real thing. There's a lot of businesses that have called folks back to the office, and we're grateful for that. But even with the rise of work from home and this in downtown now putting more residential units online, we want downtown to be a neighborhood of choice. And most folks don't simply choose where they want to live just simply because of the amenities of the building that they live in. They're looking for that vibrancy. They're looking for, where's that coffee shop that I go to in the morning? Where's that restaurant that I can go to for dinner? Where's that grocery store I can grab something to on the way home? And if those amenities don't exist, they'll choose to go somewhere else. So we're literally at a place where we have to do both simultaneously. We right now have in the pipeline over 1,200 units that will be coming to downtown, particularly in the Gay and High corridor and area. So that's ripe to be able to make that investment and to ensure that it's a catalyst for those residents to come. So in this case, this is not traditional mm-hmm. economics that we're talking about here, economic development. We have to do both in order to be successful, because we want downtown to be a neighborhood of choice for folks, not just simply a place where you come to go to work, but a place where you choose to live, a place where you choose to hang out with family. It literally is this cliche, but it's so true. Downtown is everyone's neighborhood, mm-hmm. And we want to have a slice for everyone and see themselves reflected in downtown, if that to be true.
Do you have more money to put into ground floor growth? Is this initiative going to keep growing?
It is. You know, our goal always was that downtown was the catalyst for it, work out the mm-hmm. kinks. If we can do it there, we can actually potentially pick this up and take it to other neighborhoods as well. Proud to say that in the current proposed budget, there is funding to continue the work of the Ground Floor Growth Initiative. We are looking at right now, what does that expansion look like? Is it ready to move to another neighborhood? Do we continue to focus on the Gay and High area and really double down on it? Because we want this to be successful, right? We don't want to just simply say that we came up with a formula, walk away, and folks close their doors. You know, my vision for businesses, and particularly Black-owned businesses, is not about we pat ourselves on the back by how many businesses were opened or created, but we pat ourselves on the back by how many businesses stay in business. And so even with this initiative, folks will tell me, they'll say, how do you know it's successful? I'm like, well, we won't until year five. Mm. That business is still there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and we're in year three right now. Is that right or no?
We're in year technically two the folks who are in their leases. That's because everyone didn't move in at the same time.
Yeah.
And so when we launched the program from application to folks getting their keys and in the door, most of them are in year two. But that's really what we should be thinking about when we talk about the small business ecosystem. How many businesses are staying open and continue to generate? How many of them are growing, right, hiring more people? When you think about the impact of Black-owned businesses, just for the state of Ohio, for instance, that's a $23 billion total economic impact that they have, right? They employ over 129,000 employees, and that is something that is very, very significant, and it equates to about $2.7 billion in tax revenue that goes back to the state. So these businesses are generating revenue and value for our communities, and what could more they could they be doing if we remove those barriers and continue to give them opportunities to tell their stories? So that's why I'm so proud of the Ground Floor Growth Initiative, so proud of the Urban Business Connection with our Columbus Chamber of Commerce that's really focused on Black-owned businesses and getting them into the Chamber of Commerce so that they can remove that hurdle of barriers, of be able to network and to advocate for themselves as well. But it all works together to, again, to build that small business ecosystem so that small businesses can thrive because they are the lifeblood of our community.
We are running short on time, but I wanted to take a second to touch on, I read about a project called the Center for Entrepreneurial Development. It's in a renovated warehouse on East Main Street. And basically, they're helping small business owners network and collaborate, teaching each other how to succeed.
Yes.
Tell me about how a place like that helps minority businesses.
Yeah. So Co-Ed, as we call it for short, and Derek Pinnell and his team are out there doing great things. Was glad that in last year's capital budget, we were able to secure $1 million to help them with the continued renovation of that building, that space. But it's so critical because, again, those businesses can learn from each other and grow from each other, learning about best practices, learning from mistakes, but also within themselves build their own ecosystem. So at Co-Ed, you have seasoned businesses all the way to businesses who are just in the ideation stage, right, learning from each other. You also have different professional services there to help one another, right? So if I'm a t-shirt making company, that's I make t-shirts, but I may not be an expert in marketing, but there's marketing professionals that are there, right? There are lawyers that are there to help with contracting and those types of things. So creating that type of ecosystem where folks can learn and grow from each other is so critical because it's not just simply about access to capital, although that is the largest barrier that we know for Black businesses, still access to capital. It's also about making sure that you have all of the parts and pieces in place to have a successful business model, to be successful, to be able to then get you access to capital. And so that is what Co-Ed is doing for businesses every single day and really proud of the work that they've done. It's something that spurred up organically. It was a vision of Derek Pinnell and his team. And we were just, I think, happy to be able to invest to keep it going and to take it to the next level. But there's amazing things happening over there on the east side of Columbus.
We have been talking about the growth of Black-owned businesses with Columbus City Councilman Nick Bankston. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you again.
And coming up, we're going to talk about the impact of Black-owned businesses on the Ohio economy. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We just looked at the growth of Black-owned businesses here in Columbus. We're now going to broaden our horizons and look at the impact Black-owned businesses are having on the greater Cincinnati and northern Kentucky area. Last fall, a State of Ohio Black Businesses event was held to look at addressing this issue. And Gregory Parker is the Director of Member Services for the Greater Cincinnati Northern Kentucky African American Chamber of Commerce, and he joins us now. Welcome to All Sides, Gregory.
Thank you, Amy. Good to be here.
So Ohio is the home to the nation's largest and oldest Black-owned business. It's a moving and storage company that we're going to talk about later in the show. But you conducted a study related to Black-owned businesses, looking at the eight counties around Cincinnati. Can you tell me what was some of the major findings of that study?
Sure, Amy. So we commissioned the University of Cincinnati to do a study of Black-owned businesses in our region, which covers eight counties around the central Cincinnati and northern Kentucky area. And some of the impacts that it had, or the information, I should say, that it had, we looked at the fact that it created, black businesses created $2.8 billion in sales and were responsible for supporting 16,472 jobs. And that kind of equates to $635 million in earnings in that 8-county region. Another piece of impact that it had was it generated $1.5 billion of direct sales and employed about 9,000 people in the area, along with earnings of $341 million.
Yeah, that, and, yeah, go ahead. That's I mean, that's a significant impact, too. Continue. Sorry to interrupt.
Sure, no problem. Yeah. It also supported additionally $1.4 billion in indirect sales. So as a result of those businesses just strictly being in business, that was the impact of indirect sales, which supported an additional 7,448 jobs, along with earnings of $293 million.
What does indirect sales mean? Does indirect sales mean that people who work at these black-owned businesses, they go to lunch somewhere or that kind of thing?
That's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Along with the sale of different items that may be an aspect of the sale. So if you're going to grocery store, if you're selling some type of media services, then as a result of that contract, maybe other sales are going on. So it's just things that may impact that just because that sale happened.
Mm. Yeah. Do you know how did you go about figuring out, you know, that a business was a black-owned business to have them participate in the study? Is it just basically like they self-identify as, you know, this is a minority-owned business?
Yeah, there were surveys that were sent out and related to, and this is all, some of these are documented in, you know, in state and tax information, state and city tax information. So that information was drawn through the University of Cincinnati's Economic Development Department, and they kind of had that information available.
Now, your job is basically, you're a part of the African-American Chamber of Commerce. So, like, this is your business. You want to know about, you know, black-owned businesses. But whenever you decided you were going to commission this study, did you expect, you know, a $2.8 billion impact? Did you have any idea what you were looking for?
We did not know what to expect. I mean, we had an idea. We knew that, of course, black businesses are not as significant a part of the economic engine. So that's what we're trying to drive is the opportunity for more black businesses to be a part of the economic engine in the region. So the study is helpful in knowing where we are so we can know how, you know, where we what kind of things we need to do in order to help businesses grow in the area.
Is this a baseline study? Had you never done it before?
Well, this is the third year, I think. And I wasn't around when we first did it. So I just kind of came into the region, into the company about 3.5 years ago, 4 years ago. So some of this was going on. And but it's a new study. It's never been done, at least prior. We were one of the first to do it. I know in the region and maybe I don't want to go as far as saying in the country, but it was a really significant and a really innovative view to take to see what the impact is in the region.
So when you can take this information and you know where you're at with black-owned businesses, how can that help you grow them? Like, how do you take this information from this study and, like, you know, make it expand?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is awareness, right? So it starts with you know, where are we in regards to that? And that information can help businesses that have projects and contract opportunities that are going on, procurement opportunities, and let them know that there is a reason to really make sure that black businesses are involved in your projects because they provide value. You know, another piece of the study that it brought out was that the $34.3 million was generated in earnings and sales tax revenue for state and local jurisdictions. So with that kind of information, it encourages the cities and the states to really get behind helping black businesses be involved in, again, the economic engine of the region, because it brings significant tax revenue, significant jobs. And so if we can, of course, increase that, multiply that, then it's good for everybody. good for the region.
Yeah. And one thing I didn't know, that my producer, Marcus Charleston, found out that three of the top 10 Black-owned businesses in the nation are here in Ohio. I had no idea. So you mentioned that awareness piece. I mean, that's a big deal. They contribute thousands of workers. They contribute a lot to the state's economy, right?
That's right. And I'll speak to one of those businesses, which is a oil and gas company. And they really, he's got a very modest story about how he grew from literally nothing to, you know, this billion-dollar company. And so it really just shows how if we invest in, you know, in the region, in small businesses that really have something to that can expand and scale up, if we can help them do that, then, you know, it can really bring a lot of economic growth to our region.
Now, you mentioned your study was like an 8-county area around Cincinnati. But do you feel like are most of the Black-owned businesses in the state, are they concentrated in Cincinnati, Columbus, Cleveland, or do you find them in like smaller areas? Do you know?
It's interesting because they're all over, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we think that because, you know, the major cities like Columbus, Cincinnati, Cleveland, of course, you've got some impact there. But they're throughout the state. So yeah, of course, our study focused on the 8-county region, but they were, you know, not just in the Cincinnati area, but throughout the region.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the economic impact of Black-owned businesses in Ohio with Gregory Parker, Director of Membership Services for the Greater Cincinnati Northern Kentucky African American Chamber of Commerce. Do you know if the Black-owned businesses in Cincinnati are increasing? I know you said you weren't around when the first study happened. You've done the study maybe three times. Has it grown in those 3 years?
So it has because, you know, for about 4 years ago, right, or prior to that, of course, we went through COVID. Mm. So that had some impact on businesses. And we lost a few businesses through that. And I think that happened nationwide and also happened in our area. But since that, there's been some growth in businesses and startups and businesses coming into a growth phase. So that's been helpful. And so I think we are on an upsurge, but we still need a lot of help to help these businesses really get the funding that they need, the support that they need to really scale up.
We just spoke about programs here in Columbus that are designed to boost minority-owned businesses. Do you have a similar program in your area, like an incubator in Cincinnati, to help increase minority-owned businesses?
We do. And that's a lot of what we do is we partner with companies that and organizations that can help businesses grow. So whether they need funding, excuse me, whether they need acumen around just business-related topics, we help them connect with different incubators, different funding opportunities. Excuse me. We partner with MBAC, which is the Minority Business Assistance Center. So that's a state-run organization. They're housed within our African-American Chamber offices. And so they have different programs that help them get certified in minority as a minority so that they can participate in some of the different funding opportunities that are set aside for minorities to help them grow. So there are different organizations that really help focus on different minority organizations, and we help connect them with those programs, along with provide the resources to different projects and contract opportunities that are going on throughout the state so that they can be participating.
When you talk about funding, is it like funding to get off the ground, to get your first, you know, lease on a place or that kind of thing? Like what kind of funding are we talking?
So it's across the board. Sometimes funding come from banks, fundings come from grants, fundings come from organizations like ECDI and organizations that provide funding for businesses. Some funding, they really, sometimes it's difficult to find funding for startups. You know, sometimes they're investors. So we'll have a business come in and do a pitch to some investors. So it's kind of across the board. So we try to find what their need is and satisfy that. So we look at the different resources that are available that we have contact with and tie them into those resources. Mm.
In the past on this show, we've talked about economic disparities that minorities face. I mean, you just mentioned getting a loan from a bank. You know, it's well known that African Americans have a harder time getting that first loan than someone who's white. How do you help minority-owned businesses overcome that?
So, you know, it's about who you connect with, you know, so we really try to connect with banks and bank officers and lending and funding institutions that know the type of businesses we're bringing to the table. Mm-hmm. So they understand they may come from underserved communities. They understand that they may not have, I don't know, maybe the best credit score. Maybe they just weren't aware of where this business was going and opportunities that they may have had. So they go reach out to some funders. So what we try to do is connect with funders that understand that and won't just deny a loan, but will actually talk about what we need to do to help you get there, you know? And so it really matters when you talk to people that really still have a heart also to helping the economic environment that we're in, you know, within the region. So,
yeah, I can imagine that if you're someone who's an entrepreneur, you want to start your business, and having the Chamber of Commerce, like your group behind them, like basically a seat at the table, you know, walking to the bank and saying, like, we support this business, therefore, Mr. Banker Man, you should support this business. Have you heard from, you know, entrepreneurs? Does that help?
It does. Mm-hmm. It really does. And you know, just having someone in your corner that understands, you know, your needs, because sometimes, you know, especially new entrepreneurs that get into a space that are scaling up into an environment that maybe they haven't been in, they just need someone there that can connect them with opportunities that let them know that, oh, yeah, I can do this. You know, so there is a bank out here that will support me, or, you know, maybe where I thought that I didn't match up, mm-hmm. I can compete and win a contract. So having us there to not only support them from a financial basis or from a connections basis as far as connecting them with projects are there, but actually letting them know that, you know, you can do this because we've got other examples of businesses that have come from where you are, and you can talk to them. So we really have provided a community for them to feel confident that they can go after a particular growth aspect of their business.
Mm-hmm. Have you done any work with women-owned businesses or immigrant-owned businesses?
Yes, we have. Yes.
Is that any different, or is it the same thing we're talking about with the way you're talking about helping the Black-owned businesses?
I mean, it's the same. Every, you know, businesses come to us because we really, they feel like we can really help them, and we have an ear for their concern. We serve underserved businesses that are, of any kind. So it could be underserved because they're women owned, because they're immigrant, because they're Black, and just aren't able to tap into the community that will help serve them. So different businesses require, you know, different things from depending on the industry they're in, and also depending on their, you know, where they're coming from, the background they're coming from. So I think we have a staff that is just really good at catering to the needs of the community. And I want to mention too that we do serve, you know, smaller businesses to help them scale up. But we serve a lot of large corporations that are part of our membership because they have a need too. They have a project that they want to fulfill and they want to be competitive too. So the more contractors that can bid on their jobs, the more, you know, the better it is for them and for their bottom line too. So we have companies that we work with that can be an asset to them, but sometimes they don't know they're out there. So we can bring them to the table. And, you know, it's a benefit to both.
We've been speaking with Gregory Parker, the Director of Membership Services for the Greater Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky African American Chamber of Commerce. Thank you so much for joining us on All Sides today, Gregory.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy.
And coming up, the nation's oldest and largest Black-owned business is located here in Columbus. We're going to speak with the co-owner. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We've been talking about how more Black-owned businesses are being grown in Columbus. We spent the previous part of the hour looking at future growth, but sometimes it's good to look at the past, too. And the city has a storied history with this topic. E.E. Ward Moving and Storage, founded in 1881, is America's largest and oldest Black-owned business, and it's located right here in Columbus. We're going to learn more about the history of the business. Joining us now, we have Brian Brooks, co-owner of E.E. Ward Moving and Storage. Welcome to All Sides, Brian.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
So tell me a little bit about the origins of E.E. Ward Moving and Storage here in Columbus. I mean, it's a long history back to 1881. That's a long time. But how did it end up in Columbus?
So E.E. Ward ended up in Columbus. It was founded by John T. Ward and his son, William S. Ward, in 1881, as you mentioned. But John T., though, he moved here from Virginia with his family when he was 9 years old. Mm. And grew up in the Columbus, Ohio area, eventually taking a job at City Hall as a janitor. But then as times progressed and there was a lot of different things going on in the city, and obviously it was that time around, we're now talking around the 1860s, and there was slavery was obviously a concern of many. And John T. Ward, who was born a free man, actually became a conductor on the Underground Railroad. Mm. So on the Underground Railroad is where John T. Ward kind of first started his hauling.
His moving.
Hauling and moving expertise.
Okay.
And 1865, the abolishment of slavery, that, you know, obviously, fortunately, we saw those needs go away. But John T. realized he had developed this skill set with his two horses and a wagon that he can continue to haul. Mm. And so whether it be grain, he hauled items for the Union Army after that time of the 1860s, and it progressed. And then he and his son in the 1880s and in 1881 realized they had this skill and talent to open up a moving company.
Wow, that is fascinating to start with basically moving people, like, and moving them to try to keep them safe and like helping people, but then turning it into a business. I mean, when you think back of that history, does that like humble you a little bit? To think that, you know, like you're moving boxes and companies and all kinds of big, you know, corporations hire you to move, but it started with those beginnings.
No, it's very humbling, and it's an honor, to be honest with you. I mean, the legacy is great. The legacy is powerful, as you mentioned earlier. E.E. Ward is the oldest continuously operating Black-owned business in the United States. And the key word there is continuously operating, because as you mentioned, with the calendar turning this year to 2026, we now look at this company being in its 145th year of operation.
Wow.
And you think back over 14 and a half decades of what was overcome or worked through. We're talking world wars. We're talking pandemics. We're talking stock market crash. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on of the perseverance that the Ward family for 120 years, everything they worked through, when they easily could have thrown up their hands and said, you know, this is just too tough. This is too much. You know, there are too many obstacles against us right now. So, the testament to, you know, John T., William S. Ward, Edgar Earl Ward, Eldon Ward, and all those wards that ran the family is their perseverance to really work through all those obstacles and every day show up.
I can't imagine, I mean, starting a business now has many challenges, but they must have been tenfold for an African-American in the 19th century. Do you know hurdles that John T. Ward had to overcome? Did people want to hire him to move their stuff?
Well, it's, you know, as you mentioned that, yes. I mean, there's so much history. As you look back through articles about the company and interviews that they had done. In fact, my wife and I actually were working on a book that we plan to have out this year that talks about the history of the company. Because the story itself is where the power is, the story, the entrepreneurial story that of what E.E. Ward is all about. But yes, the hurdles were there. In many of our research, you read about the stories where the same days that they were going to move customers is the same day that there was a Ku Klux Klan march in downtown Columbus on High Street. Mm. I mean, so you just think of the parity there. You know, you're sending your men out to do a job, but 10 blocks away, there's, you know, a whole movement of social and economic challenge going on right then and there in your same city.
Now, I read that the grandson of E.E. Ward took over the business, and the whole business has been very involved in Columbus, but this person in particular was very involved. He was on 40 different boards for Columbus, from the Red Cross to the YMCA to the Columbus Foundation. So do you know much about the history of this company caring about Columbus?
Well, yes, you're speaking of Eldon W. Ward. Mm. Eldon W. Ward was John T. Ward's great-great-grandson.
Okay.
Eldon, also known as Mr. Historian, he loved Columbus, Ohio State Buckeye graduate. You know, he was Mr. Columbus. And, yes, he was very big about giving back. As you mentioned, those different boards, the YMCA was very near and dear to him as well as the Columbus Foundation. In fact, the East Side YMCA is named the Eldon and Elsie Ward Family Center. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yes,
oh, that's
yes.
great.
And only fitting, mm-hmm. I have a picture. Eldon was actually my godfather.
Okay.
So I have a picture of him, you know, in my office, of him with the shovel, and my fathers are with him and other black leaders at that time when they were first breaking ground on that East Side YMCA on Woodland Avenue. Mm-hmm. So. No, Eldon was big about giving back. He was a man of the people. He loved serving customers. He loved his employees. He definitely embodied the whole moniker of what his great great grandfather set out doing. As far and you think back, I mean, where did John T. start? John T. started doing what? Helping people escape to freedom. Mm. And it's only fitting that Eldon kept that same spirit going that his great great grandfather had initiated.
Now, you mentioned your connection. So your last name is Brooks, but
correct.
You are, related because you said you're the godson. So that is what puts you with the Ward family?
Yeah. So there's no relation, but my father, William H. Brooks, was a longtime Columbus, Ohio attorney, mm-hmm. practiced law for 50 years, was a municipal court judge, and many positions in the city of Columbus. And so he was Eldon's attorney for around 20 years and also represented the company. Through that relationship, they became really good friends. And my mother and his wife, Elsie, all became very good friends. And upon my birth, they asked Eldon to be my godfather. So I grew up knowing the business. I would go by and visit him many times. But what was really great is Eldon had this ritual. 5:30 in the morning, every morning before he went to that office on Main Street, he would go to the Y and swim, and he would pick me up on the way. So he taught me how to swim at the YMCA. That's why I'm saying it's only so fitting, and I love the fact that they honored him by naming it after he and Elsie.
Oh, so what led you to eventually purchase the company? You have been a co-owner of it since 2001.
Yeah, through the years, obviously, stayed close to the company and awareness of it. Eldon retired in 1995, which actually marked his 50th year of running mm-hmm. the company. So he ran the company from 1945 to 1995.
Okay.
Retired to the Phoenix area, and then his niece, Dolores White, took over management of the company. But, it became a lot to handle, and Dolores needed to kind of find a succession plan. They didn't really have one in place. Mm-hmm. So my mother was in a conversation with Dolores one day. They used to walk around Franklin Park three times a week. And on one of these conversations, she just said, "Mary, I need some help, but we've got to figure something out."
Oh, that walk turned into a business deal.
Yeah. Yeah. My mother's walk turned into it turned into her calling me saying, "You need to do something." Mm. And so, when mom calls you, you listen.
Moms
to
know best.
Right.
Yeah.
So, made that phone call, a couple of visits out to see Eldon, and through some conversations and some legalities in 2001, April 2001, took over ownership of the company with my business partner at that time.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the nation's oldest and largest Black-owned business located here in Columbus with Brian Brooks, co-owner of E.E. Ward Moving and Storage. So what are your duties being co-owner and in charge of the company now? What are you managing things? Are you moving boxes?
No, not moving any boxes. But no, I mean, obviously, I pride myself in, you know, being a steward of what John T. and Elding wanted to establish, which was serving people at a high level. Mm-hmm. Elden had a saying, do what's right, come what may. And we live by that. So I personally take it upon me to make sure that our customer experience is the best. You know, the customer service that's what makes us different. That's what sets us apart. That's what has allowed us to have 145 years worth of customers who continue to either come back, refer, or tell someone else about us, you know, to move their items. So that's a, you know, a big part of what I do. But obviously, as you know, as president, co-owner, oversee our locations, our managers that we have. We have upper management, middle management. Proud to say that, you know, since that acquisition in 2001, we've since expanded. E.E. Ward now has locations in Charlotte, North Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina, and most recently Orlando, Florida. So glad that we've been able to expand and since making the business stronger, making it a larger footprint of servicing customers across this country.
What made you decide? That was my next question about the expansion. What made you decide that is it just natural to want to eventually be a bigger company?
Well, you know, being in relocation, mm-hmm. Obviously migration trends and patterns really drive a lot of your business decisions and your strategy. And so that being the case, I mean, it's no secret that the Carolinas have become a very desirable place for people to relocate to, move to. People have always moved to Florida. I mean, it's always the number one destination spot in the country.
And they need help with that. That's far.
Right. So, you know, but so it was just through opportunistic things, you know, that came up, opportunities with different customers, where we were moving a lot of customers to, seeing this trend, because we started this back in 2017 is when the expansion really started. Mm-hmm. And it was, like I said, it was really taking note of the migration patterns and where we were servicing a lot of customers, knowing that we saw an opportunity for ourselves to grow the company and make it stronger.
Do you have any future expansion plans, or are you going to stick with North Carolina and Florida for now?
Right now, you're always looking for opportunities. Mm-hmm. You always have to be ready. But I will say, you know, Orlando, the Orlando acquisition just occurred in May of 2025, so it's pretty fresh. Mm. So we are still, getting that under our hands and feet, so to speak.
Yeah.
Getting our hands wrapped around that one. But it's been good so far. It's been really a good move for the company. And again, the key word is synergy. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you hear in many business opportunities, it's, you know, the synergy of us really locking in and having a, you know, transit lanes that really play well to where the business opportunities are.
So the company has been around for 145 years now. Do you feel pressure to make sure it's in business for another 145 years?
Well, I would call it a duty, a responsibility. Again, as I mentioned earlier, the legacy is great. The legacy is greater than anyone that could be running the company. But no, you do feel a responsibility to keep that going, because what really resonates well is, like, when I do interviews or we do interviews like this, or we share this story to a broad audience, it never fails. There's someone who says, I never knew that. Mm. And many times,
I'm one of those people. I learned all about this, you know, for the show. Yeah.
And many of those people who say, I never knew this, are business owners themselves. Mm. So it goes without fail that we'll get a nice little note or an email or a message that says, you know, you really inspired me. Mm. I own a barbershop. I own a landscape business. You know, the story of that company, it made me feel better today when I went and opened up my shop. Mm. So, you know, that's the power of the story of E.E. Ward and what we really embody and what we really cherish in it.
We only have 30 seconds left, so I'm sorry to ask you this with only 30 seconds, but this whole hour has been about growing Black-owned businesses. So what would you say to someone who owns a small, you know, they're an owner of a business, it's a small business, about the growth and, you know, sticking with it?
Well, in 30 seconds, I would say, you know, it's repetition. It's continuous efforts. It's it's not a one-hit wonder. It's not one swing at the bat. You're going to have to keep swinging that bat. You have to show up every day. And like I mentioned earlier, John T. Ward, Eldon, all the Wards, they showed up for 120 years times 120 times 365. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's perseverance. It's being consistent. Continue to service your customers in a consistent manner. That's really what it doesn't sound magical, but it's what's important.
Our guest has been Brian Brooks, co-owner of E.E. Ward Moving and Storage, the nation's oldest and largest Black-owned business. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for listening.